You're going to download the examples from Chapter 3 at my site. And those are the ones that we're going to look at. And after you download them, you need to also unzip them. You do not need the disc that comes with the book, so if you want to get a used book, it's fine. Finally, I got mine. Anybody else got theirs?
CIS Basics, correct?
Say that again.
It's Chapter 3, right?
Chapter 3.
Oh, 3 loops.
The first one we're going to look at is InfoCalc Project. So I'm going to do a File, Open Project. New Project is if I've got a new one, Open Project. And I am going to go and find it. And what did I say? Info? Oh, variable. Info. So I'm going to click on InfoCalc Project, go down until I hit the SLN. When I hit the SLN, I am clicking on the SLN, and that opens it, eventually. Okay, so there's the form, and it's called InfoCalc Form. Good Lord, it's taking forever to do every step of the way. Okay, so again, I've got a bunch of buttons, a bunch of text boxes, and a bunch of labels. And this thing at the bottom is a label. If you look at that, if you click on anything, it shows over here what it is. So that's a label. And I just put a message in that label down here under text. So that's a text box that I put a message in. Okay? If you want to find something and you can't seem to find it, if you click on this, it will show you the different things. Okay, wait a minute. There we go. I will get to it yet. There. I kept clicking on the wrong thing. This shows you all of the buttons, all of the labels, and all of the text boxes. So if you want to see any one thing or find out what one thing is named, you can do that. Then if I click on Text Greet, it highlights the box that was named Text Greet. Okay? So it's an easy way to find stuff. Okay? it's now up in design mode. The easiest way to get into see the code is to click on one of the buttons. And when I click on whatever button I click on, it is going to, the cursor is going to show up on that button. Okay, so that, the code for that button is where the cursor will be. So I usually click on one of the early buttons, and that way I get the beginning. Actually, I don't want to do that. Okay. So here is my form. And if I click on the green half diamond, or whatever you want to call it, it will start the program. Okay, now I decided I would like to see the code, so I can come over here, click on greet. That brings up the code. That colored box at the bottom is the executing program. So if I bring this up, I have both. Okay, so now I have the program up here, and I can see the code, which is what I want. Okay, so I put out there a bunch of ways that I can show something. I can put it in a label, I can put it in a text box, or I can put it in a message box. Okay? So I am going to be able to do all three. So I'm going to put in a name, John, and then I'm going to put in Doe. My greeting is only using first name. I'll use the last name a little bit later on. So I put in John Doe. This was a text box. It didn't show up because I can't really see a text box. I'm sorry, a label. This was a label. I'm having a bad day today. This was a label. This is a text box. There's nothing around a label. There is something around a text box. And if I mess up any more, please tell me. So here I'm saying label.greet equals hello concatenated with text name. Concatenate is an ampersand, is what we're doing. And as I mentioned in any way that was in my earlier class, in PHP it's a dot. In Visual Basic it's this. Yeah, concatenation. In HTML, it's a plus. I mean, JavaScript, it's a plus. So concatenate is one of those things that nobody could agree on. And you just have to remember what it does.
This was an ampersand?
This is an ampersand. Okay? So I've got a label that has got hello concatenated with the name. I've got a name, a text box that has it, and I put up a message box. messagebox.show. As I mentioned in CIS 120, if any of you were there, there is a shorthand to that. This is the old way of doing it, which is MSGBOX. And I use that when I'm doing debugging, because it's a lot easier to write MSGBOX than it is to write messagebox.show. Okay? So if I'm, and I use messagebox a lot to debug. And so the old version is MSGBOX, and I tend to use that when I'm doing it. Okay. So the old version is MSGBOX. And it's still supported. Which is to say that you shouldn't do it when you're doing a professional copy of this, but it's fine for debugging. So now I'm clicking OK, and notice where the cursor goes, because I said put text name dot focus. So the last thing that I do here after the message box is I put the cursor goes up there. So focus repositions the cursor. Notice it waited and did not execute that line, because once a message box goes up, it sits there and waits. And waits, and waits, and waits, and waits until you click OK on the message box. When it goes away, then it continues on. So a message box gives you a pause.
So whatever dot focus will bring your
the cursor there.
Wherever you want.
Yep. And if it was a blank field that I was going to, it would go to the beginning of the field. But since I already had something in there, it went to the end. And that's not true of every language. Sometimes the focus will always go to the beginning. Okay? So, now I came down to the next one, which is the me close. So if I hit exit, it will close. Alt X will also exit, and just hitting the Xbox up there will exit. So there's three ways out. If you are, again, producing something professional, you probably want to have an exit button as opposed to relying on the X on the form. Okay, so the next one gets into calculate. And notice that feet is got white background and inches has a beige background or a gray background. It has been defined as a read only. So I can display results, but the user can't change. So that's read only, so I can't put any data in there. That's a real important thing to use. And I could have used it up on the name, too. But essentially, if you want to keep the user from entering information in a box so that you can display information, make it a read-only box. And then they can't. So in the properties, I set read-only. Okay? So if I say, okay, 2 feet, 5 inches, and I say calculate, it comes back and tells me 30 inches, and then it gives me the x-rated information that there are 12 inches in a foot. It's wrong that 12 inches in a foot?
Well,
I put in 2.5 feet.
I'm thinking it was 14.
You're having a good day just like me. Yes.
The STR note that you made, is that, you said it was a read-only text?
Well, the STR note is just a, I wrote string note. That was just a work area. So what I did here is I have a work area called string note. But I said there are 12 inches. And I dimmed it right above, where I said dim the string note is string. When I took and put that message in it, I could have done it all in the same line. I could have said dim string note is string equals there are, and done it all in one line. And then down here, when I want to put it on the form, I said put string note in there.
Oh.
Now, I could have just got rid of all of those things and at the bottom said textnote.text equals, in quotes, there are 12 inches and a foot. But then I wouldn't have got to define a variables. And I was into defining variables, so therefore. And then I did a calculation and I multiplied the feet by the inches and a foot, which I gave as 12. And if you're following Tom, you could have defined that as 14. And then I did the calculation, and I came up with a 30. Huh?
I'm following me.
So 12, 2.5 feet is 12, 24, and another 6 is 30. There are loads of ways that I could have done that. I just decided I wanted to define a string, and I wanted to put something in the string, and then I wanted to put it up onto the text box. That is probably not the way I would do it, because I'm more lazy than that. So I probably would have just said textnote.text equals and put it in quotes. Okay? But my point was I wanted to show how you can make a variable. This time the variable, I called it an STR. I don't want to have a variable have either any of the things that I would use for text boxes. So I don't want it to have a TXT at the front or a LBL at the front or something like that, because then I'll confuse it with what's on the form. And as I told you before, sometimes I make them WK. This time I said I'm going to have one that has INT, and I'm going to have one that has STR. In this line, I define INT inches and foot, and then I initialized it. On the one that I commented out, I defined it as integer and assigned the 12 at the same time. So, again, there's multiple ways you can do it. Now, I made a mistake here. Does anybody see where my mistake is on that? Look at textnote.txt. I'm going to get out of here. And I'm going to go back to the form. And I'm going to click on... I'm going to bring them all up, and I'm going to click on text note. Notice what text note is. Text note is a label. Okay? It's not a text box. It's a label. So I should have named it as LBL note, but I didn't. I labeled it as text note. And I should have labeled it as LBL. So since it's a label, I should have labeled it LBL. Did it hurt anything? No. Because this is just the name of the field. I call it TXT or LBL for my sake, not the computer's sake. The computer could care less what I call it. I can call it ABC.note. I can call it just ABC. I can call it just A. I can call it anything I want. So I made a mistake, but I left that mistake because I wanted to make the point that, okay, I called it TXT, but that was just for me. The computer knows it's a label. So when I say put something in text note, it puts it in the label that I call a text note. So it knows the right answer. I don't. I screwed up, but I didn't screw up in a way that's going to mess up the computer. It could care less what I called it. So I should go back and call that LBL, but I'm not going to because I like it being there because it has this little talk. Okay? So now I'm going to go back and run it again. And I'm going to start and bring up the code. Both. Okay, so now the next thing is down there is date. I'm going to go ahead and put in the John. Oh, also, notice, I put in John, and then I hit tab. And where did I expect to go?
To the next box.
However, where did I go?
Down.
So if I hit tab, I'm down here. Okay? So, oops, that's another thing that needs to be fixed. So, I'm going to get out of this again, and I'm going to go back to the form, and I'm going to look at this, and that field has got a tab index of 1. If I look back over here, that has a tab index of 0. Okay? So, this has a tab index of 0, this has a tab index of 1. Okay? Where did it go? It went down here, right? Or it went down someplace. It didn't go here. Let's look. That has a tab index of 16. So clearly, I put a bunch of stuff on this form and then said, oh, I want a last name. I went back and put the last name in. Because the numbers are the sequence that I put in on the form. So what I should do, if I want the tab to go there, is I need to change the tab index to 3. And then I need to go on and change whatever else has to be changed so that I systematically go through this. Notice that there is a label over here, but you can't really see it. But if I go to label, let's see, label date, no, exit note, label name, I think it is. If I go to label name, that would be the label. And I called it label name, and it has a tab index of 0. Oh, I'm on the wrong. That's label name. I'm sorry. What is this? That's going to be label something. If I go into my code, let's see what that is. It's label greet. Okay? Label greet. So now if I go and find label greet, there it is. And notice when I click on it, it puts up that little mark that tells me where it is. But if there's nothing in it, it doesn't show where it is. But now if I look at its tab index is 2. So that's what happened, is it went to 0, it went to 1, and then it came down to 2. Okay, so it came down to there. And then the next one, which is where the next text box is, a 3. Okay, so I put them on in the order of 0, 1, 2, 3. When I'm tabbing, it actually goes to the text box. Okay, it doesn't go to a label when I tag, because a label doesn't take input. So when you watch it go, it goes John, and then it tabs down to the 3. It skips the 2 because the 2 wasn't the text box. So it tabs down to the 3. Okay. So if I want people to be able to effectively use the tab, I've got to go through and make the tab index go in the sequence that I want them to go. Otherwise, it's the sequence that I put the stuff on the form. Yeah.
On the labels and things that you don't want the tab to go to, can they all be zeros?
I don't think it will let you do all the same number. I've made them all high before, because I just labeled the text boxes. I don't think it lets you have the same number, but I have to admit I don't think I've ever tried it. So go ahead and try it. But I have made the text boxes the main numbers. But okay, so now I keep going, and if I tab, I go up to that button. So I usually also give a number to the button, because lots of times when I tab, I may want to go to a button. So I think about that, whether I want to go to a button or whether I want to go someplace else. On this one, I went to the button. And then after that, it goes down, and it goes to feet, and then it goes to the button, then it goes to inches. So it's definitely the way that I put these on. And now it's back up to there. Okay. So I'm putting in John Doe, and I hit greet, and it shows up in the 3 places. And then, as I said, it will just stay here forever until I click the OK, because message box is a halt. Okay, so I click the OK, and it's back. So then I put in 4 feet, and it tells me 48 inches, and then I clicked on date, and it tells me 1/24/2010. Okay, so here's the date. I said dim date, dat date show is date. Dat date show equals, and notice the number signs in front of each one. That's the way I surround it to let it know it's date, it's date data. And then I put that into the text box. And it showed it as 1/24/2010. And then on the last one, I said, I want the whole name. So I said, pronounce the first name, concatenate that with a space, and concatenate that with the last name. So I've got first name, space, last name, because I'm concatenating them together. Questions? Yeah.
Is there a way to add another button into a message box?
Add another button into a message box? No, I don't think so.
Would it be okay?
You have the button outside.
Oh, okay.
Again, some of these things I answer with a 99% because I've never tried them. Oh. I've never tried to put a button in a box. But I don't think it will work. But the manual is far more detailed than I ever want to be. So, the best way to do is to experiment with this stuff. I mean, just play with it and see what works. It's not shy about telling you no. Okay. Calmer gives me comments. So you can see the comments up there. And when I do something two ways, I frequently put not comma, quote, single quote. It really is not my day. Okay? That particular symbol is a single quote. It's not a comma. I had a good night's sleep last night, too. Anyway, the single quote makes for a comment. Okay, so that's that program, so let's open the next one. So I'm going to close the solution, and I'm going to open the next one, which I believe is something else with calc in the middle, bare calc. Oh, yeah, right. I need the SLN. This really isn't my day. So am I coming down with the flu or what? Okay, so I've got a whole bunch of things here that are basically, again, show and tell. So if I look at the code and then I run this. Okay, so the first thing I have up here is I dimmed something right at the top under class. And I said dim GV option as string. And then I made the comment underneath it that this is a class level variable. It's also called a global sometimes. And to be honest, that's what I usually call it, is a global. But a class level variable is what your book calls it. Okay, so it's a class level variable or a global level variable. Have you found it okay? Okay. So, a class level or global variable means that every single one of these subroutines can see it. Okay? So if I want a variable that all of my subroutines can see, I define it up there as a class level or a global variable. If I define a variable within a subroutine, then it is only available to that subroutine or any subroutine I pass it to. And we're going to forget that I said that for a few weeks, and then we'll start passing it. Okay? But it also can go to any procedure or subroutine that I pass the data to. And that's what we'll do when we get into this a little more, is we'll be passing the data. Okay, but for now, global means it can be used in any subroutine, and defining internally means it can only be used in that subroutine, internal to the subroutine. So global is before any of the subs. And then I went into a sub. And I said, okay. First, dim string major as a string and make it empty. So string.empty makes it empty. Okay? And that's the hardest part about Visual Basic, is remembering all these lovely little things like string.empty. Am I really going to remember that tomorrow if I haven't used it a lot? That kind of thing. So then I said, all right, now take that string major, put it in a text box, and show it. And notice I can't enter anything there. That's a read-only. In the properties, I defined it as a read-only. Okay? So I'm going to click on Set Major. And it's coming up and showing me what is in that box right now, which is empty. Because I said dim string major as a string. Okay? Put it in the box. And now show me string major. And string major is the thing I made string empty. So it's empty. Okay, so now I'm saying next, make string major equal to CIS. Put that in the box, and now show me what's in the box. Okay? So again, all this is about showing the string.empty. Okay, now the next one going down. Okay, so that's done. String major equals computer information systems. String major, put it in, and I will see that I'm going to have a problem if I take out the comments. Okay? So if I take out the comments on this, and already I've got the problem, because what's it telling me? It's putting curly lines under string major, and string major, it's therefore telling me, was not defined. Okay? So I needed to have a dim for string major in order for it to work. Okay, so if I try to run this now, it comes up and says there were build errors. Would you like to continue and run the latest? No, I don't want to. So that will not work unless I go in and dim string major. And if I dim string major, then it would work. Okay? But it's not going to work the way it is. Now, the one below, I didn't dim gov option in here, but I did dim it up above as a class or global. So therefore, it will work all right. So set major, okay, okay. Problem is fine because it is now all commented out. Show one is showing programming, and show two is showing networking. And again, those were fine because they were using gov option, and gov option was defined globally up at the top. So all of the subroutines can see it. So it's working fine. Okay, so now I'm going to do an add. So I'm going to have 27 and 12. And when I add, look what I get. And anybody that took CIS 120... knows what's happening here. What is it doing? It's concatenating. So the plus is also a way of concatenating.
Carcinogenic or something like that. Carcinogenic.
Yeah. But we're going to do that down below. So that add is taking and concatenating. Okay? Now the reason it's doing that is that the things that come in on the form come in as text. And so the the kind of the default thing for all text that you put on the form is text, although it will use it as a number when it feels you should, like in a subtract. But the plus is also a way of concatenating. So since it's coming in as a kind of defaulty text, when I do the add and I just add them up, it says, oh, you must mean concatenating, and concatenates. The line above it is the way I want to do it, which is convert it to a number. And I could use cint to convert it to a whole number. I use cdbl, which converts it to a decimal double. Okay? So if I do another add, oh, another add is more complicated, I forgot. So if I come out of here and I go back and run it again, and I'm going to put in the same numbers, 27, oh, actually, sorry, it really isn't. I'm going to comment that one out and take out the comment so that it's now working, and I am going to run it. And then I'm going to put the numbers in. And I'm going to do an add, and it adds them to 39. So as long as the conversion happens, it does that. And as I said, anybody in CIS 120 saw this, especially with JavaScript, and saw it with VB for that matter. And why has the pen gone away? Did I click on the pen? This really isn't my day. Maybe I'm getting the flu. All right, so she says optimistically, or else I'm losing my mind, one or the other. I think I'd rather have the flu. Okay, so the next thing that we're going to get to is a subtract, and it did that just fine. And notice that one is using the text that comes in. But again, it figures out that I really want to do a subtract, so it kind of does the conversion behind the scenes. The problem with the plus is that the plus has two meanings. It can mean add, and it can mean concatenate. So it makes the wrong decision and chooses the concatenate if I don't do the conversion. So the subtract works fine. The multiply is going to work fine. The division is going to work fine. And another add is going to do two other numbers. It's not really using those numbers. If you look down at the bottom, you can see the other add. On this one, I set up a constant. Notice instead of doing a dim, I did C-O-N-S-T. A constant is something that you're not going to change for the duration of the program, where if you dim something, you can change it. But a constant, you're supposed to leave alone. So that 12 that I did before on an inch, 12 inches makes a foot, that would have been perfect for a constant. Because you're not going to change, unless you're Tom, you're not going to change how many inches are in a foot. Okay? That's right. So that would have been perfect for a constant. So I set up two constants here with two numbers, and then I added them together, and it gave me 12.75. These are all just kind of the little nitty-gritties. Not as much fun as some other stuff. But they're all the nitty-gritties that you really have to kind of deal with. I dim double num and I put 2, 3, 4 in it. And I said crash, okay? So that means I didn't have something in the right field. That's a good point. So what happened here? Okay, I said text original.txt, and I wanted to convert it to integer, okay? And let's go find out what text original.txt is. Okay, so that told me that I had an error. And if I come back over here and look at my form and say, okay, find text original.txt. So there it is. So apparently I needed to put in a number there. And that was going to convert it to integer. So I'll put in, when I run it, I'll put in 34.56, convert to integer, and it comes up with a 35. And I forgot that I had to put a number in there. I was thinking I had to find it. Notice the convert to integer rounded up because it was 34.5. If I put in 34, well, let me take a picture of that. If I put 34.123 and say convert, then it gives me 34. So it follows the standard mathematical rounding rules. Okay? And so it rounds up if it's over 5 and it rounds down if it isn't. What about if it's just 5?
Rounds down.
Nope, it rounded down. And 5.1 rounds up. Okay? So just 5 goes to round down. I couldn't remember my mathematics as to whether 5 was round up or round down.
I remember it being rounded up.
Well, you weren't at the table when they wrote the Visual Basic. Yeah. There may be some other language that agrees with you. Okay. So then I have a convert to string and a bunch of other conversions. Convert to currency. So there's showing me a currency. Convert to string. That's showing it as a string. Okay. So if I go and look at these. Okay. So if I have a convert to string, it converts it. And it just shows that decimal points can be shown. The other way that I can do a convert to string is I can use CSTR or I can use the name of the field dot to string. Okay, so those are two ways that I can convert to string. I can say CSTR, which is convert to string. Or I can say, take the number and perform the toString function on it. And down below, I can also, when I use the toString function, put the C in there, which says make it currency. It's these little things that are hard to remember. And I honestly think that one of the best things you can do for your own sanity is kind of go through these programs and make a list of some of these. And, you know, keep it posted for a while so you remember how you can do the different conversions and all of that sort of thing. Because I still have to look those up, and I do have a list of the stuff that I need to do. And if you're taking two languages, it becomes even worse because the other language does it a slightly different way. Or three or four. Okay, so that one is done. Questions? Okay, what's the next one on the list? The next one is intro exception. And we really will get to a little more interesting things some other week. But this is just a tedium. Did I not click on that? I guess I didn't. Okay. This one is catching an arrow. And it's a kind of nice thing to do. So, if I run this, and I put in the number 123.4 or something like that, and I say convert, it converts it to currency and puts out the dollar sign 123. Okay? Now, if I do the convert, try, catch, it does exactly the same thing. So now I'm going to put 12AB, and I'm going to click convert only, and it's crashing. And it's telling me that conversion from string 13AB to type integer is not valid. In other words, it doesn't know what to do with AB. Which is a reasonable thing, because I don't know what to do with it either when I convert it to a number. Okay. So now, if I go back and I start this over again, and I put in 12AB again, and do it with this convert try catch, it comes back and tells me there was a data problem, which is a lot better than crashing. Okay, and the reason is that I came over here and I used the try. So I put in the try, and the stuff that I wanted to do if everything was fine, I put under the try. So it's the same code as I had up at the top. The difference is I said catch EX as exception, EX being the exception that happened. And so it will catch an exception, and I said if there is an exception, put the word data problem in. And it did. So it couldn't do it. It takes the catch and does whatever I tell it to do in the catch. And this is a nice way of not having things crash on you when you do a calculation. On the next one, I've got the numbers, let's see, we will have not numeric. So I'll have a 12AS, and I will have a 3. And I will say calculate. And it comes back and says data, not numeric. So notice this time I had set up here, just catches an exception. Here there's a list of different exceptions that are common, and this one is an invalid case cast exception. And so that will catch specifically not numeric. There is also a divide by zero exception, which is really kind of interesting, because if I put in the 12 and the zero, and I do the calculate, it comes back with infinity. And that's not what I told it to come back with, but it doesn't care. It comes back with infinity. Okay, I picked the display zero exception. I told it to put out another error, and it said, nah, I'm putting out infinity. So if I want to look like I know what I'm doing, I should have changed that another error to infinity, and then everybody would think I chose that. Okay? Because zero into something is infinity, so it's fine. Okay? But I found that interesting, and I have tried to do some reading at some point about if there was a way I could convince it, but it's stuck with infinity. Okay.
So how did you fix some crashing originally?
by just putting in the try and the catch, I basically put in up here a try and said, do this math. If it doesn't work, I want to catch the exception. And instead of crashing, I want to put out the word data problem. And down here, I said I wanted to catch, but here I got specific about the kind of error that I wanted to catch. And so I said invalid cast exception, or I said another kind of error, which was divide by zero exception. So I got explicit as to what errors I was looking at. And if I thought there was a possibility of one I hadn't thought of, I could have also put in here another catch EX as an exception and data problem, so that if it found something else, it would take the generic. Catch as exception is kind of the generic. So I can have the specifics, and then I can have the generic too.
Okay, so the convert only button you made it, so it does crash on purpose.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, on the first one I did not put in anything to keep it from crashing. I just let it go ahead and crash. But when you're doing calculations, this is a nice thing to put in, because you would much rather have it do this and then the user can go in and fix the data, then have it crash, and then the user has to rerun the program. So it's a lot nicer to do the try-catch and let the user know there's a problem, and I just, you know, then they can go back and fix it. So when I see infinity, I can say, oh, you know, that's not working, because I put a zero in there, I'll go back and put a two in, and now it does it and gives me the right answer. So I'm not crashing, I'm giving the user a chance to go back in and fix the problem, because the problem is with data entry. So the user gets to fix the problem, and that, you know, is a much better thing than having it crash, because users usually do not know what to do when things crash. Okay, so better to do this. And you could be much more explicit about the message you put out and say, you know, you need to do such and such and such and such, and give them a very explicit message, as opposed to the very generic, except for divide by zero, which you're going to give them the infinity message. Okay, questions?
With the try, it's kind of handled the same as like an if or a while.
Yeah. And in fact, you could do the same thing here with an if. If you wanted to, you could have tested to make sure that the number was a numeric, because there is a test of numerics. And so I could have done that too. But in fact, try-catch is just easy. It's an easy way to catch obvious mathematical errors. And the main time you want to do that is with mathematics, yeah? What?
And with catch, when does that go?
The catch is just telling you what to do if it doesn't work.
Oh, okay.
So the try is, try this, and the catch is, if it doesn't work, here's what I'm going to do.
Okay, so it's like an else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, it's very much like an if else. Okay. Now what comes next? Use group. That one's not really worth too much, but we'll go through it quickly. Oops, I just did the, yeah, right. Hmm. I don't want any of those. Why isn't it giving me... Okay, what have I done wrong? I didn't unzip it, I guess. There it is. Okay, the only thing that this one is doing is notice that little box. It's talking about putting that little box in. Okay. And it's made a group. And this is called group product info, and it is using a group box. And I'm trying to see the group box. What category it's under. There it is. It's under containers. So if you think it looks nice, you can put a group box on.
You still gotta put each field in?
Yeah.
Inside the
box? Yep. It's a way of looking right now. When we get into a little bit later, I think there's some stuff that you can actually do with it. But right now it's more of a look thing. And then... Okay, now this one has the load in it, too. Up until now, all of our events have been click events. This one has the load in it. Okay, so when I load this, it puts up a message box. So if I run this and I load, that's what happened when I loaded. It says, please enter item name, price, and cost. And when I say okay, then it brings up the form. And so it's item 123, the price is 12, the cost is 8, calculate profit, it's a 4. Okay. Now, to get the load event is like, it's a thing that happens before anything else happens, and it only happens once. So the load only happens once when the form is being loaded. To get that, if you have the form, if you click any blank space on the form, it will make that load. And notice when I clicked on a blank space in the form, it brought the cursor in here to show that it would make the load. So if I click on any blank place on the form, it takes the name of the form underscore load, and it makes the load event. And that is executed when the form is being loaded for the first time. Okay, so it's the load event. And if you look out on the side here, it will say handles mybase.load, which means the base of the program. So when the base form is loaded. Whereas the others say they handle a click on a different button, that one says it's handling the load. So it's a load event. And you can see the load up here, and that tells you that it's the load event. If I wanted to go in and just code it, I could actually go in and make up a private sub and give it a name and click the load, and it would make the load event. When I come down here, notice that changes to click. So that's the click event. And here, up here are the gazillion events that you can have. And we will be looking at a bunch of them as we go along. But those are all of the events that you can have.
Can you change it just by clicking on one of those?
Change it. By clicking on one, just half a second. I actually want to do this, so I'm not totally paying attention. Okay, so I come back over to here, and you want to change this. I don't think I can just click. I can change it. Mouse click. Let's see what happened. No, it ignored me. You can go back in and change it. But I don't think you can do it just by clicking on it. See what happened down at the bottom. I clicked on the mouse low and it gave me the euros of root mouse click. So it gave me a new sub. So as opposed to changing the sub, it gave me a new sub.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got 10 minutes, which I think is enough time to do the last one in this chapter. So let's open Project Math, because that's, I don't think, has many new things. And this really just has add, subtract, multiply, divide, but it has a few other things that you can also have. So I've got the add where I do the conversion. I have the subtract. I have the multiply. I have the divide. Then you come down to reversing the... integer divide is work first, and it's the reverse and of the slash. Notice the regular divide is that way, this is this way. We'll try the mod. Mod gives you the remainder. And what's the last one? Power gives you the power to whatever power you want it to go to. Okay, so if I run those, okay, so I will put in 123.45 and 45.42. Okay, so if I add, I get those added. If I do an add without doing the conversion, I get the concatenate, so that gives me the concatenate. If I do the subtract, I get a subtract, multiply, divide, integer division. Okay, so 45 goes into 123 twice. Plus, but if I want an integer division, which is reversing the slash, integer division, gives me 2, because it goes in only 2 times. Okay? If I click on get remainder, it tells me the remainder. If I click on power, it does the power. And I have no idea, so let's try a different number. 7 and 2... and say power, 7 squared is 49. Okay, so that was power, and 7 squared is 49. Get remainder is 7 goes into 2. I mean, 2 goes into 7 3 times with a remainder of 1. And I don't quite know why I put it out twice, but I did. Because I can't see any particular reason why I put it out twice, but I did. Okay. So, in case you didn't notice, we just finished chapter 3. Which means in your spare time, You should be looking over chapters 1, chapters 2, and chapters 3. We really will slow down, but these first few chapters are just the stuff. And so we're going through those fairly fast. Okay, so in your spare time, please read chapters 1, 2, and 3.